Good day. My name is Maureen. I'm going to be reading the Iroquois Times Republic for the week of January 30th, 2024. The first article on the front page is titled Harris Named Interim Police Chief in Watsika. Lieutenant Mark Harris has been appointed the interim police chief in Watsika. The Watsika City Council approved that appointment at the January 28th meeting after an executive session. The appointment includes a $200 per week stipend for as long as he remains in the position. There are also stipulations that no changes will be made in duty assignments, vehicles, equipment, and policies. The city has been searching for a new police chief since current chief Jeremy Douglas announced his retirement last month. He will be retiring March 1st. There will be a municipal election in April, and at that time, a new mayor will be elected. It was noted that the new administration will be making decisions on the permanent appointment of a chief. Current Mayor John Allhands, who is not running for re-election, made the appointment and asked for a vote of consent from the council. That vote was approved 7-0 with Alderman Don Miller absent. Later in the meeting, Harris thanked the council for the appointment and spoke to them. He said, "I just want to say thank you for this opportunity. When I became a police officer here in Watsika, one of my goals was to eventually become chief. I did not think it was going to happen so fast. It's going to be challenging. However, I want the new candidates to keep in mind that I am really interested in becoming the full-time chief. I'm currently enrolled in college. I'm set to graduate in November. I know there's been talk of the other two candidates maybe having them come back, but I want to keep in mind that I am interested in becoming the full-time chief. I plan on being here for a while. I still have 17 years before I can retire. I want to see this police department go forward in a positive manner. I just want to make everybody aware of that, and feel free to contact me." Harris is also the handler for K-9 Tucker, and he said that will not change. He will be working with Douglas in the next few weeks to transition into the interim chief position. The Times Republic traditionally asks some key area officials questions about how the previous year went and what they see for the future. This is one of several stories appearing in the next few weeks. They all were asked the same questions. This week is from Watsika Park District Executive Director Sherry Johnson. Question: what would you say is the greatest accomplishment of 2024 for the Watsika Park District and why? Our biggest accomplishment was acquiring the Learning Tree Daycare and getting through the first phase of our building improvement and moving process. One highlight for sure was the return of our Marine Griselda Ruiz. She makes a light for us like no other. Next question, what do you see as some of the major projects for the Park District in 25? We are going to do some major fundraising programs, and we are going to expand our current ones. Question, what would you most like the public to know about the Watsika Park District? We are involved in our community 365 days of the year. We're always here and always involved. Question, what is the biggest challenge facing the Watsika Park District in 25? Our biggest challenge is keeping up our energy to continue to finish our expansions and improvements while facing funding obstacles. Question, what was another highlight for the district in 24? We had so many in 2024, we can't really narrow them down. Question, what can residents, local leaders, business leaders, and others do to help the Park District? Volunteer. Donate and participate. Do not let something you need in your community go because it isn't at the forefront of your thoughts. The next article, the 2025 winners of Iroquois West High School's Radar Idol, were determined January 18th. 11 students performed during the event, which was conducted by the high school music department. DeAndre McGinnis was the Judge's Choice Award winner for his performance of Dancing on My Own. The People's Choice Award winner was Aubrey Chandler, who performed Wondering. Second place went to Curtis McCoy, who played guitar and performed Kickstart My Heart. There was a tie for third place between Paige Miller, who performed Not the Only One, and Jesse Martinez, who performed Skinny Love. Radar Idol is an annual event put on by the Iroquois West Music Department, and each student that performs gets the opportunity at the end of the evening to raise cash donations to help offset the cost of their spring music trip. According to Jessica McIntyre, music booster advocate, each student that performs has a basket with their name on it. After all of the performances are complete, they go out into the crowd to collect some cash. It's super fun for the kids and their fans. The student that collects the most cash in their individual basket is awarded the People's Choice Award. The two judges give a Judge's Choice Award as well as a second and third place award. After each student performs, the judges take turns giving compliments and feedback. It's a super fun night, and the kids really look forward to performing and wowing their fans and the judges. This year, we opened up the talents to include vocal performances and instrumental performances. Kim Hall is a Music Booster president. Stacy Reed is the vice president. Raylene Honeycutt is the secretary. Amy Chandler is treasurer. McIntyre and Destiny Cheney are advocates. Choir director is Hannah Lauritsen, and the band director is Brian Corbel. They're a marvelous team, and they are working hard to bring the love of all things music back to Iroquois West. This year's spring music trip will be to Nashville, Tennessee. We have about 20 students going, and they will get to enjoy a fun itinerary with visiting the Grand Ole Opry, dinner on a riverboat, line dancing, shopping, dining, and other fun Music City attractions. The music department's next big event will be SpongeBob the Musical, with show dates of March 13th through 15th at 7 p.m. each evening. It is a show for all ages. Ticket prices and sale locations will be announced soon. The next article, several properties in downtown Watseka that are owned by the city are now up for sale. At the January 28th City Council meeting, the council approved ordinances authorizing the sale of real property. The addresses are 10 West Walnut, which is the J.C. Penney's or Old Opera House, 209 East Walnut, 217 East Walnut, and 223 East Walnut. The last three are properties across from the Watseka Theater. According to the minutes of the January 21st Finance, Legal, and Audit Committee of the Council, there was discussion of putting the properties up for sale. A local nonprofit group had formed to try and save the Opera House building. The building has been discussed for quite some time and what should be done with it, with people on both the pro and con sides. Two older people, Scott Anderson and Jenny Delar, have long said that the building is a liability and should be torn down. That was reiterated at the January 21st meeting. Both have said that they did not believe that taxpayer dollars would be spent on the building to restore it. In the meeting minutes, it was asked by Anderson to have the three properties and Opera House building put up for surplus property with an ordinance for Attorney Joe Kankar, C-A-I-N-K-A-R, which was voted on January 28th. After the meeting, the Watseka Community Renewal Group, which had been formed to save the Opera House, issued a statement saying the group is ending its attempt to partner with the city to restore the building. The group says in the letter that they still believe in the project and that buying the Opera House in its current condition is not an option for the group. The last of the front page articles is titled, Balkama Liaison Addresses Watseka City Council. Illinois Senator Chris Balkama's liaison addressed the Watseka City Council on January 28th. Balkama, that is spelled B-A-L-K-E-M-A, is the new state senator for this area, replacing Tom Bennett, who did not seek re-election in the last election. Mike Hayworth introduced himself to the council and said Senator Balkama has a mission statement of lead with love. It is indicative of who Chris is and his faith, Hayworth said. He said Balkama was sworn in January 8th and worked with the transition team with Bennett and his staff. A list of proposed legislation for the spring session, it has been pared down from 81 to 30 bills. Those are 30 bills he will either sponsor or co-sponsor. Balkama's committee assignments are agriculture, behavioral, mental health, education and labor, pensions, and revenue. He welcomes the idea of perceptions that individuals have, the issues, the concerns, and to bring them forward to his office. The goals are protect life, reduce costs for those living in Illinois, making Illinois a welcoming place for businesses and residents, and building trust with the entire district and the organizations. He said with the goals is also the idea of building relationships. One of the reasons that Chris has come up with this travel liaison is to get out there in the field to be his eyes and his ears, said Hayworth. He said Balcoma will do as much as he can to get out with the people of this district. The new senator has offices in Dwight, Pontiac, and El Paso, as well as Springfield. There's a fairly lengthy article about District 249 Board of Ed meeting, and I will summarize it. The Board of Education of Crescent Iroquois CUSD number 249 met Monday, January 27th at Crescent City Grade School. Board President Steve Massey called the meeting to order at 7 p.m. Four guests were present: Mart Rabe, Mayor of Crescent City; David Kosick, Randy Coleman, and Darren Christensen, representatives of the Crescent Iroquois Fire Protection District. They were there to inquire of the board's plans for the former Crescent Iroquois High School property. Shorter went over the fiscal year 2026 school calendar, touching some of the major points. A teacher's institute will take place Monday, August 18th. Winter holiday break dates were discussed, December 22nd to January 5th, and spring break, March 23rd to 27th. In the superintendent's report, Schroeder said the appraisal has been received on the former high school property and will go up for bids in February. As far as financials, he noted several counties are struggling to get their assessed value. The principal's report put District 249 enrollment at 51 at grade school, 24 junior high, and 33 high school, for a total enrollment of 108. The board adjourned at 7:30 for executive session to discuss appointments, employment, compensation, discipline, etc. The board approved the hiring of Steve Tetherow as PE Art STEM STEAM and SEL instructor, pending proper certification and background check. He will have a start date of February 3rd, 2025. Mr. Tetherow's employment will end on the last day of the current school year. The next school board meeting will be February 24th. The next article, Iroquois County Natural Hazards Mitigation Plan to be available for public review. The Iroquois County Natural Hazards Mitigation Plan, outlining projects and activities to reduce damage caused by severe weather and other natural hazards, will be available for public review and comment starting February 13th. According to information from Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency Coordinator Scott Anderson, a public forum will be conducted in conjunction with the Iroquois County Hazard Mitigation Planning Committee meeting. That will be at Crescent City on February 13th. Individuals can come and review the plan anytime during the forum. Those unable to attend can still review the plan and provide comments without participating in the public forum. The plan, along with a summary sheet and a comment survey, will be available for review at the Iroquois County Clerk's office and on the county website. The comment period will remain open through February 27th. Anderson said public comments received will be used to make any revisions needed before the plan is submitted to the Illinois Emergency Management Agency and Office of Homeland Security and the Federal Emergency Management Agency. The Iroquois County Hazard Mitigation Planning Committee has been conducting working meetings open to the public since January 24. The committee updated the plan with technical assistance from the state and federal agencies, as well as a consultant specializing in emergency management planning. The municipalities of Ashcombe, Beaverville, Chabant, Danforth, Gilman, Watsika, and Woodland have participated in the planning process, with a number of other jurisdictions contributing. This plan describes how the county and the participating jurisdiction have been impacted by severe weather and other hazards and have identified specific mitigation actions that can be taken to reduce damages to people and property before events occur. A local resident placed fourth out of 24 competitors at the 2025 Illinois Association of Agricultural Fairs State Talent Contest last weekend. It is Audrey Newcomb, N-E-U-K-O-M-M, the 15-year-old daughter of Brian and Shannon Newcomb of Cisna Park. She took the stage in the junior division at the association's convention with a piano solo entitled A Series of Licks and Intros, which included those from classical and 70s-80s rock hits. Audrey's performance impressed the judges enough to earn fourth place. Placing third was a dance solo from Sangamon County. Second was a dance solo from Scott County. And the winning act was a dance trio from Schuyler County. Audrey represented Ford County after she won the junior division in their Fair Talents contest back in June of 2024. In agricultural news, the USDA published an interim rule establishing guidelines for climate-smart crops used as biofuel feedstocks, as well as a feedstock carbon intensity calculator. Announced January 15th, the 83-page interim rule establishes guidelines for quantifying, reporting, and verifying the greenhouse gas emissions associated with the production of biofuel feedstock commodity crops grown in the United States. The rule includes three primary feedstock crops: field corn, soy, and sorghum. It also covers climate-smart agriculture practices that could reduce greenhouse gas emissions or sequester carbon. Notably, the interim rule allows for adoption of CSA practices both individually or in combination, providing farmers the flexibility to adopt the CSA practices that make sense for their operation. This rule enforces the important role climate-smart agriculture plays in a rural economy, including in fueling clean transportation solutions, as well as the importance of providing pathways for unbundled, science-based accounting of the carbon benefits of climate-smart practices that help farmers earn more for what they grow, said John Podesta, White House Senior Advisor for International Climate Policy. The covered CSA practices include reduced till, no-till, cover crops, and specified nutrient management practices. And specified nutrient management practices such as nitrification inhibitors, no-fall application of nitrogen, and split in-season application of nitrogen. Farmers can calculate farm-specific carbon intensity scores in line with the standards of the interim rule using the USDA Feedstock Carbon Intensity Calculator, which is a subportion of the Greenhouse Gases Regulated Emissions and Energy Use and Technologies model. The calculator was published in its beta version with USDA collecting feedback before it is finalized. The interim rule includes guidelines on the following: biofuel feedstock crops and entities in the biofuel supply chain, quantification of farm-level crop-specific carbon intensity, chain of custody standards for entities in the biofuel supply chain, including traceability and record-keeping, auditing and verification requirements. Climate smart agriculture practice standards for the biofuel feedstock crops are included under the rule. The interim rule establishes voluntary guidelines that may inform the development of requirements for programs that incentivize low carbon feedstocks. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack told reporters the Trump administration has additional work to do on 45Z, and the expectation is they follow through on the guidance. He added that the incoming administration can use USDA's new guidelines and calculator in finalizing tax credit rules. The interim rule also lays out verification requirements, including accredited third-party verifiers auditing a sample of the farm supplying reduced CI crop. The USDA is opening a public comment period for 60 days regarding the interim rule. This story was distributed through a cooperative project between Illinois Farm Bureau and the Illinois Press Association. There is more news on a website, farmweeknow.com. A Another agricultural article, the U.S. Department of Energy released an updated model evaluating life cycle greenhouse gas emissions for biofuel feedstocks under the 45Z Clean Fuel Production Credit. The release of the 45Z CF GREET model follows the U.S. Department of Treasury and IRS guidance that was released on January 10th. Tax credits are provided for the production of transportation fuels with life cycle greenhouse gas emissions below certain levels. The credit applies to eligible transportation fuel, including sustainable aviation fuel, produced domestically after December 31st, 2024, and sold by 2027. The model includes feedstock-specific fuel production pathways for SAF and non-SAF fuels. The model is designed specifically to evaluate life cycle GHG emissions to meet the requirements of Section 45Z. The updated GREET model allows certain foreign feedstocks to be used to make U.S. biofuels, including Canadian canola oil and Brazilian sugarcane ethanol for SAF. Under the 45Z guidance previously published, foreign unused cooking oil is currently not allowed. This story was distributed through a cooperative program through Illinois Farm Bureau and the Illinois Press Association. An article discussing scholarship opportunities for high school seniors. I believe this has been in a previous publication. But this was offered by Mediacom, M-E-D-I-A-C-O-M. Mediacom Communications is offering $60,000 in scholarship support for high school seniors who plan to obtain further education. The scholarship program is in its 24th year, and Mediacom's investment will award $1,000 world-class scholarships to 60 high school seniors. Starting in the fall of 25, scholarship recipients have the flexibility to use the financial awards to support post-secondary college costs or vocational training from an accredited institution. Award selection is based on academic achievement and leadership accomplishments. This year, Mediacom's world-class scholarship application process has fully transitioned online at the website MediacomWorldClass.com. Applications, including recommendation letters and high school transcripts, will now be submitted online. Information has been sent to all high schools in areas where Mediacom delivers its high-speed internet services. High school officials are asked to encourage seniors to submit online applications before the March 14th deadline. Applicants do not have to be Mediacom customers, but must live in the 22-state area served by Mediacom's fiber-rich broadband network. The online application includes a list of communities that are included. The next article. The Lake Village, Indiana Community Center was filled with people who were Schreiber strong January 25th as a benefit was conducted for the family of Corporal Brandon Schreiber, a Newton County deputy who was killed in the line of duty last September. Organizers said between 700 to 1,000 people attended the event, which saw people from Newton, Lake, Benton, Jasper, LaPorte, and Pulaski counties in Indiana. Iroquois and Kankakee counties in Illinois and other surrounding states were in attendance. Ryan Holloway, one of the organizers, said, "We came together as a community to honor the memory of our fallen hero, Brandon Schreiber, and I am overwhelmed with gratitude for the incredible support we received. To the amazing crew that helped put the benefit on, you all rocked it, and I thank you." The organizing committee included Holloway, Stacy Duncan, Angela Fenley, Nikki Kimbrell, Lori Postma, and Tammy Skrizcut. The event included raffle baskets, drawings, barbecue dinner, and music. People were able to get something to eat, bid on raffle baskets, take part in the live auction, and honor Corporal Schreiber. During the event, Don Baxo of Dyer, Indiana, presented a $500 donation to Katie Schreiber and a book about September 11, 2001 for the raffle. Baxo spoke about being a survivor of the World Trade Center. Corporal Schreiber passed away on September 11, 2024, and is a survivor of 2011, sorry, is a survivor of September 11, 2001, Baxo said he felt he had to do something. He started a nonprofit in the early 2000s. We go around and speak about what happened to us on September 11th, myself and other survivors from this area. We have raised enough money over the years in our nonprofit that we donate back to our first responders and our fallen first responders. As a token of my gratitude to you and Corporal Schreiber, a check for $500 we hope it will help alleviate some problems and financial burden. Also that evening, a pipes and drums group performed for the attendees. That group included Newton County Reserve Officer and Newton County Emergency Management Agency Director Matthew Van Drunen, who was one of the bagpipers. After the event, Holloway said the organizing committee has been pleased with the turnout. They did not have a goal that they wanted. We just wanted to raise as much as we could for the family. Katie Schreiber provided a written statement after the event. On behalf of myself and my family, I want to sincerely thank each and every one of you who came out to support the benefit in honor of my late husband, Corporal Brandon Schreiber. Your presence, kindness, and generosity mean the world to us as we navigate this difficult journey. Your support helps us heal, and it reminds us that we are not alone. Thank you for honoring Brandon's memory and showing us such overwhelming love. We will never forget your kindness. With deepest gratitude, Katie Schreiber. Those who could not attend but still want to donate may do so through the Kentland Bank at either Kentland or Lake Village branches. An article about the Waseca Theater. The Marx Brothers performed there, so did Red Skelton, Paul Harvey, Hopalong Cassidy, and Roy Rogers. Built in 1931, the Waseca Theater was part of the vaudeville circuit. When Chuck Gomez and his wife, Deborah Liddell, toured the theater after it had sat vacant for 20 years, windows were busted out. There were holes in the roof, and they counted 200 dead pigeons. But they didn't let that sway them. They could almost hear the ghosts of entertainers past who had performed there, who had signed their names to the theater walls. A theater is more than just a building. It's a place where memories are made and dreams are formed. Motivated by its history and the possibilities, Gomez and Liddell bought the theater, renovated it, and returned entertainment to downtown Waseca. It is all part of a life in the music business for Gomez, who counts Paul McCartney, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, and Roger Ebert among the people with whom he has rubbed shoulders professionally. The renovation was just one of the comebacks with which the Gomezes have dealt at the theater. The COVID-19 pandemic landed a blow to Waseca and the theater's economy. After reopening the venue in 07, we were doing 40 to 50 shows a year. Everything from Bret Michaels to Ronnie Millsap to the Marshall Tucker Band. Now we might do a dozen a year. During the weekend, Canned Heat, one of the featured acts at Woodstock, performed. Gomez called it one of our best shows ever, with fans attending from Ohio, Indiana, Iowa, St. Louis, and the Chicago area. Gomez is passionate about vintage theaters. His initial efforts to buy the theater were met with red tape after the original owner's death. He found the new owner years later and was able to buy the building. Looking back on the history of the Waseca Theater, Gomez said on December 7, 1941, the manager stepped out on stage moments before the movie started and informed those in attendance that Pearl Harbor had been bombed by the Japanese. A group of men decided to enlist in the military after hearing that news. Gomez and Liddell have modernized the theater with a bar, cafe, lounge, and banquet room. Thank you so much for listening to this edition. For this week, I hope you enjoy the rest of the week. Thank you for listening.